Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, coming to you from Namibia, Africa, and around the world.
yes, indeed, guys. Namibia, Africa, and around the world.
And around the world, yeah.
And we know that specifically for our Eagle FM listeners that follow us or that listen to us daily through the Eagle FM application, you're obviously very much appreciated, guys, wherever you find yourself. Hopefully, if there's a bunch of you in the Middle East, you know,
please stay safe.
Please stay safe, very safe, please. There's an interesting discussion, Helmut, that I saw. There's a professor. He's a professor Jiang. He's an expert in game theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of game theory. Yeah. Now, game theory is the thing that Jeffrey Sachs always mentions in his presentations or his discussions, and Jiang is literally such a particular academic in game theory. Now, any Namibian would ask me, is this about video games? Not really, guys. This is actually game theory in... The reason why I explain the way I do is so that I can get people on board in terms of understanding what I'm presenting or saying. But game theory is actually a simulation on war strategy. So, and this is from government or political leaders down to military leaders, and even for economic risk assessments in that regard. Yeah. Reason being, because Jiang was recently interviewed by a online news platform known as Breakpoint or Breaking Point or Breakpoint or something like that. And these guys asked him, you know, you made back in 2024. So the question was, Jiang, you made three predictions in 2024. Trump would win the elections, Trump would attack Iran, and the United States would lose this fight against Iran. And I decided to watch it only today, that particular discussion. Obviously, while in preparation for our show for today.
When did that take place?
I think in this week.
I mean, the interview.
The interview took place anytime between Monday to now.
Yeah.
Because obviously, the attack happened early Saturday morning, if you can remember.
Yeah.
So they organized this interview with him like Monday, between Monday and yesterday. So Jiang outlined, yes. And then he explained the, you know, in terms of the fight, the attack on Iran situation.
Yeah.
He explained literally that the, according to him, the Iranians have been preparing for 20 years for this.
Now, yeah, I think when it comes to that, they have been preparing since...
I think since the 70s.
Yeah, since the 70s.
So it's probably for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at that period, from 1953 to 1970, no one goes through that period and just, you know, still be asleep. After the 1970, you know, after the Iranian Revolution, after that, they were like, you know what?
Even after...
Yeah, that's it.
Even after the oil crisis of 1970... What was that oil? There were two oil crises, one in the 80s and one in the 70s. Even after those two, because on both occasions, Iran was the reason as to why the global oil crisis happened.
Look, it wasn't until a little later when I found out, when I was going through, Noriega and Panama. Mm. And this was just shortly after the whole 3 January Maduro situation.
Mm.
That's when I, you know, that's when I learned that, the US basically prepped Saddam to fight Iran.
Yeah. They funded him.
They funded him.
They supported
to fight.
Him.
Yeah, they supported him to fight. So, if you're a dictator, you are good until, you know, you can just go on your dictator business as long as you are serving Western interests.
But yeah.
As soon as you get out of line with that Western interest, you start having weapons of mass destruction.
Mm. Supposedly. And he was, and, Saddam was, what you call it, sort of like, no one vilified him. Only the Iranians vilified him, meaning they were very unhappy.
Yeah, their neighbors, they literally prepped him to destabilize Iran.
Yeah, the reason why Iran was unhappy with what Saddam did is because the Iraqi army used nerve gas. And nerve gas is one of the particular weapons in
bio warfare that's not allowed in modern warfare.
That the whole the UN technically says as countries, even if you guys go to war, don't use nerve gas.
So you have rules of engagement.
Yeah, don't use nuclear weapons or any other or dirty bombs, things like that.
Yeah.
Try to minimize human casualties as well, stuff like that, because the UN itself has like documents which member countries had signed on to
throw in the Geneva Convention and
stuff. Which is also one of the reasons as to why, for example, if you ever looked at the intricacies of the Ukraine conflict, the Russians and the Ukrainians were fighting the whole time around that nuclear power station in Zaporizhzhia. And when the Ukrainians lost control of the power station, the Russians literally set up multiple perimeters around it because it's literally a nuclear power station.
Yeah.
But then the Ukrainians tried to bomb their own nuclear power station.
Where the heck did they do that? I mean, this is the country with Chernobyl.
Yeah, they still have Chernobyl in their borders. So the downside of when you look at, you know, the way the rules of engagement actually plays out in real life, it just, you can see certain things happening.
Yes, like all other rules, they are not followed the T.
Yeah, or you would see one side trying to play by the rules,
and the
other one just, you know, comes in with underhanded scenarios.
Yeah.
And Jiang, specifically in his explanation about his predictions of 2024 from 2025 going ahead, was the scenarios obviously that this would potentially be a fight. I use potentially, but Jiang said the Americans probably will lose this fight against Iran or whenever they decided to fight against Iran under Donald Trump. So,
I would say PR wise, they've already lost.
Yeah.
Because it's not looking good.
The public relations also now, Helmut, is one of such great confusion. The communications person or that PRO lady of the White House.
She says
one thing. Donald Trump goes and says one thing. Then Hegseth comes along and says one thing. Do you know what was the worst part? There's a British radio presenter I always watch, James O'Brien. O'Brien goes like, so Hegseth says the Americans are aiming for regime change. But guess what? One of the people that they actually wanted to take over after Khamenei was one of the people killed in the bombing. Now the only option left.
They're looking at the war succession.
Do you know what's the worst part? The only person left to take after Khamenei is Khamenei.
Really?
His son is the next guy in line.
So look, this whole thing, if that's the case, then this whole thing is already ringing Afghanistan bells. 20 years even in worse. Afghanistan to replace the Taliban with the Taliban.
Even worse. And remember, 20 years of firstly vilifying the Taliban, saying the Taliban
and
is...
And start with a couple of years of basically prepping up the guys Taliban. Like the Mujahideen.
First supporting the Taliban against the Soviets.
Oh, yeah. That.
And no. then accusing the Taliban of being a terror organization while they run the whole Afghanistan. Which is the same template. It's the same thing they're doing, Helmut. It's exactly the same play.
Remember, you know, Noriega in Panama was used to destabilize, was basically prepped up and used to destabilize Nicaragua.
Mm.
And then, Noriega got out of line and on the 3rd of January.
While blasting music at him. 24/7.
No, that's when he ran into the,
embassy.
Yeah, into the Vatican embassy. Who plays rock music for the Vatican embassy? The American army will.
No, but they were playing it like for 24 hours, loud blasting.
The nuns in there are like, look, man.
It's not peaceful for us.
We know this whole thing about, run to the Lord in times of trouble and all, but your problems are a little noisy, so please leave.
Just go hand yourself over.
Please hand yourself over.
Yeah.
So, when you look at people that are more often described as dictators, they have close ties in terms of their origin and training with the guys that are calling them as dictators.
Mm. Most definitely.
Nice. Welcome to the world we live in.
Life is wonderful in this country. Okay, not this country, the world.
Like right now, oh, Namibia is looking all wonderful. Very wonderful.
No, it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, apologies, dear listeners, for taking you on a sidetrack. We obviously were talking about EU funding.
Oh, no, this is not a sidetrack. Believe me.
But it does build its way.
That's a good foundation because one thing about armed conflict is that they make for a very good place to test weapons. Unfortunately, that's the case. And when that happens, that painful enough falls under research and development. Because when you're selling weapons, from the look of it, you know, it turns out you have to market them as battlefield tested. In other words, they have been used to kill real people. Therefore, they are as precise as we are telling you that they are.
True. Yeah. Or that the tank can drive straight. Or that the bullet can fly in a different direction.
Yeah.
I'm still sitting here wondering, why don't we have an act
Kapena o ndando da falada Shoprite alu hokukunine o ndando da wapivi mi pumbiwa esiku gash umbapira yako kanjuwa yo baby soft fresh yo nja diri mbali diri mongoi kodro mirango hetatu nambali no sanu mirango hoi nongoi osho o mirite sire zom tiwako maiko ko Colgate ya triple action ningo mirito mirango heri nandano do active salt kodro ashiko nongona heri no sendo mirango hoi nongoi ino futashi wulite po Shoprite price ziriko sigo ka hetatu gamaritza nungvo ko Shoprite akuki waimina already steady cook ko one Africa no mapaduro ku Shoprite Shoprite and Namibia.
There's no price like the Shoprite price. We commit to bring you lower prices on all the essentials you need, like 9 baby soft fresh white 2-ply toilet rolls for only $82.99 per pack, and 100 mils Colgate toothpaste triple action or 75 mils active salt for just $17.99 each. Never pay more than the Shoprite price. Valid until 8 March 2026. Only at Shoprite. Catch ready, steady, cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by Shoprite Namibia.
Welcome back. And we continue. We are still listening to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are 14 minutes left to the hour of 5. So we still have an hour and 14 minutes to look at Africa's research and development ideas. Not much as ideas. Look, speaking now. Let me lay the foundation on the research and development discussion of the African continent. It turns out, you know, during the whole, during the 60s of, you know, during the space race, when, you know, the Soviets on one side and the Americans on one side, they were, you know, just trying to figure out on who is going to be the first person to put the man in space, the first person to put the, you know, the man on the moon and all that, you know, and all that race. Well, turns out Zambia also participated in that race. I couldn't believe I was reading that, but
okay, let's hear it, Helmut. What did our great neighbor Zambia do?
You
know, the Zambians are always like the friendliest, most positive, sadic neighbor that we have. They just do things, and you're like, you know what, guys? We'll clap for you. You guys surprise us every day.
Yeah.
There's no sarcasm.
2024 Christmas, one police officer decided to release inmates to go and enjoy Christmas. That's Zambia for you. It turns out it happened before, but back in the 90s. Back in the 90s, it was done by a judge, also in Zambia. Look, I love this country. Now, the thing...
Okay, wait. How does the releasing of inmates have to do with space science discussion?
No, I'm just giving you some, a few fun facts about Zambia. Now let's come back to the last fun fact about Zambia. During the space race of the 1960s, Zambia also participated in that space race, and the, you know, the American, you know, America had NASA, the Soviets had their, what, you know, cosmonauts. And Zambia being the inclusive country that they are, they didn't want to call them Zambia nuts. They decided to call them Afronauts.
That's name, man. That's stylish.
Yeah, very inclusive.
That's
Zambia's stylish. Like, you know, I'm not doing this alone. In the spirit of Ubuntu, I will include all Africans. In other words, before our independence, before independence, Zambia already had, a space program that included us. That's how thoughtful the Zambians are.
Mm.
Yeah, well, they took a few pictures of the astronauts. Eish, ah. In overalls. I was like,
You're not serious. You're not serious, Amu.
Oh, just hang on a second.
So
one guy doing push-up here. The newspaper article was, you know, had the newspaper article had a headline of "We are going to Mars." Now,
if you guys could see the photo that Amu showed, but literally the guy had no sleeves on.
These guys are not serious. That guy is one of them.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, they were going to Mars. You see, Afronauts were very serious with in this whole, you know. Look. The point is, research and development is not Africa's strong point at this point. Actually, there have been some significant improvement, except, now the numbers are still too irrelevant by global standards in terms of research and development. And the numbers now, according to the World Economic Forum's article that they decided to put out last year, was they compared Africa and Europe in terms of researchers. Now, what they found was that this is the World Economic Forum. Though the importance of health research cannot be overemphasized, the research capacity has not been equitably distributed across the world. Africa, for example, is trailing far behind with only 20 health researchers. This is just health researchers. These are just the researchers that are in health, not those ones that are in energy, for example. This one is just researchers in health. Researchers in health on the African continent, this is from last year, the World Economic Forum, the guys whose CEO and president also resigned because of the Epstein files. Now, according to the World Economic Forum, Africa, for example, is trailing behind with only 20 health researchers per 1 million people. 20 health researchers per 1 million people. Now, what's the standard of measurement? And now, when you look at countries that have, better health research per 1 million people, they compared it with the EU. Now, the ratio of health researchers in Africa is 20 health researchers per a million people. Now, trailing very far behind if you compare that to the numbers coming out of Europe, where Europe's health researchers per million people is 246. We have 20 health researchers per million people. Europe has 246. Health researchers per million people. All you just have to do is take 246 minus 20, and then you have one heck of a gap. You are going to have 246 minus 20. You have, 226 difference. That's how that's how far behind we are trailing. That's not the most painful part. Not only are we trailing behind, you have to understand, it's not that we are not doing anything. We are doing something. It's just not enough compared to, competitors. There is competition for everything. That's just in health. Now, you can imagine, some situations, some sectors, take for example the energy sector, could be way worse than that. The thing is, advanced research level academics that are being produced by the African continent, not only are they few, the terrible part is that, there are very few that are being produced. And that's the first terrible part. The second terrible part is those ones that are being produced don't have opportunities that will, that will keep them on the continent.
On that point.
Yeah.
Specifically, Amud, about keeping on the continent. And yes. Obviously, Zambia being the trailblazing nation that they always are.
Yeah.
Really proud of you guys. there was a key point that what's her name, the NCRST's CEO, Professor Peters, made about you can count how many researchers or scientists Namibia has.
Mm-hmm.
Has, which includes her, because she's a professor doctor or doctor professor. I've never really understood how that works.
Doctor, professor.
And then I was explained by my siblings who studied at Stellenbosch that there's a level that you reach in academia
mm-hmm.
where the person just becomes Mr. and Miss.
Come again.
You.
Hang on a second. So I'm moving from Mr. to moved, professor, doctor, you're and all that. Yeah. And then I'm back to Mr.
Yeah.
What the?
But the way it sounds is like literally Mr. Like an emphasis on the must, because there's no level past the doctor, professor. Now I see academics today have like doctor, professor labels
mm-hmm.
that they put up there. And obviously us in media, we cannot identify those labels primarily. We would identify your position if it says you're a senior professor, at XYZ Institute, but, you can only call someone doctor if the person is a medical doctor. Specifically, that's how we, the media guys, are trained. Now, the interesting thing that you mentioned is that in Namibia, you can literally only count on your hands the amount of researchers and scientists and leading academics in the country. Obviously, that these people are either associated to the existing higher education institutions, the existing government facilities that have to deal with research in one or other format, and also that these are the particular agencies and the likes that obviously are associated to the potential of these funding opportunities, obviously that you know, the platform where they discuss this. Now, here's the funny thing, Helmut. Namibia, because I just now finished an article for tomorrow's e-paper regarding research infrastructure.
Yeah.
Namibia has a particular problem where we've not taken the field of research and technological innovation seriously to, you know, continuously upgrade and update and even if you want to put in the word renovate, you know, facilities across the country. The interesting thing from that particular discussion also has been that in some cases, the biggest concern has been that 80% of those pieces of infrastructure suffer from staffing issues, meaning they don't have enough technical staff. They can't do enough of their processing, and they can't, expand and try to improve on the various scientific works that they're doing.
Just a few numbers here. I, you know, pulled from the World Economic Forum website. It's from last year. Africa's health researchers per million people, the standard of measurement they're using here. Africa has 20 health researchers per million people. 20 health researchers per million people.
There's a billion. There's a billion people on this continent.
Yeah. Africa has 20 health researchers. That's just health. Forget energy. Forget agriculture. Forget all those. This is just health.
Yeah.
20 health researchers per million people. Europe has 246 health researchers per million people. They are ahead of us by 226 percent. Researchers per million people.
I would have said percent.
Yeah. Now, when you look at that, you can really appreciate the, you know, this whole, you know, African Union, European Union collabo. Mm. And this whole about $2 trillion of investment in research partnership by the EU, basically. It's not just being done with Africa.
Yeah.
They are doing it with, you know, with other regional blocks. But, well, the good thing is we are a part of it. And I like how the funding model is structured. The funding model is structured in a way that we should also contribute. It's not just a, you know, handout. You can just have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's an excellent way of doing things.
Unless you look at the currency number or the currency.
Then it begins to look really bleak.
Yeah. Cause I mean, 15 million euros for one project. Helmut, 15 million for one project. And guess what? You should already be a doctor or have a doctorate degree.
Yeah.
Which makes it also a little problematic because the last time you and I, we spoke about the research, innovation and all that was based upon where are we sending our, our science graduates? They have to go to Germany. They have to go to China. They have to go to Japan. Then they do research there. But before that, we take the ad break, guys.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Welcome back. Still with Homerun. So we send our researchers to different academic institutions to go and do research in different fields of study.
About Namibia, somewhere else.
Yeah.
I currently know someone who's currently doing the exact same thing, literally, that we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
She's in China.
Uh-huh.
Hope she's not listening right now. But anyway.
Mother will be committed.
So, the major talking point that obviously stems from that is the intellectual property and where that is contained.
Because it's going to stay wherever you are going to study that this field of specialization you're majoring in.
Exactly. Because in the same institution, NCRST's own, what was it? The R&D report that you and I dissected. What they noted specifically was that they are this conduit agency in government that obviously dispenses bursaries to Namibians. Mm-hmm. The Namibians take up the bursaries. They go and study up. They go and write lovely research reports about Namibia in those other countries. The knowledge stays there. Then those people come back, but then they can't replicate the same work because it's obviously,
copyright
issues and the likes. And because potentially there might have been an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement in between somewhere. And then the person just cannot do anything else.
Imagine citing your own works in a research that you are doing here at home. Because
and you have to ask permission from yourself and the institute that you left the research with. whether or not you can cite that work.
People don't know the pain.
It's ridiculous. So... Yeah, so, I mean, I bumped into, a guy last year, at the Total Energies, public stakeholder engagement at the FNCC. And, cause he did economics for developing countries specifically for, from a public sector perspective. And I bumped into the guy, I'm like, yeah, because we were both high school mates here at St. Torres High School. I'm like, and I said, dude, where have you been? He said, no, Dwight, I've been, for so many years from COVID, I think like 2021 or 2022, he took one of those government, those Chinese government sponsored, advanced degree programs, through the government, obviously to go and do this particular activity and, expand on his honors degree. Or was it his honors? Yeah, on his honors degree. And then he said, Dwight, our lecturers in China are literally like 25, 23. They're not like us. They're not like the lecturers we know that are like 40, 41 or 50 even. Those lecturers there in China are like 25, 26, 27. And then they even sit there teasing the African contingent of students, like, why did you guys take so long to study to get to your advanced degree? If only they knew how expensive it is to do the advanced degrees. So anyway, yeah, so even right there, the concerns obviously are for the Namibians is the knowledge goes and stays somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now you come back into your job, for example, like in the government sense, those guys come back now, they go back into the office or the ministry or the agency that they worked for, the government, these government OMAs, and the person is just, you know, sort of like has advanced educational skill sets. But the concern is, does that person then go and do research for said ministry or the likes? Or does that person go and improve the particular sort of like capacity, personnel capacity of said agency or said office in the government? You get into what was the other biggest deficiency of that research and development report was, humanities. Now, AUEU, they cover all sectors. All sectors. That research funding discussion covers all sectors. However, you can see it as clear as daylight even today. Even through the educational policies that you'll find, that come through from Ministry of Education, you will see clear as day that there's a clear, preference given to technology, science, engineering, math.
Basically, the STEM fields.
Clearly. And even though we had the, what was that report's name? The fourth industrial revolution, 4RR.
The Klaus Schwab brainchild.
Yeah, but then the same person, the same CEO, Peters, she was on that 4RR panel of COVID. The same report that they generated back then, né? They had to add in the arts, which forms part of the humanities. But here's the thing, law or doing research on law.
Yeah.
Is a humanities perspective, but not an arts perspective. Doing research specifically in terms of the way how Namibian communities would diligently go to church every Sunday, but they fail to adhere to basic laws in the broader public discussion. Meaning, don't drink and drive. Don't drink on street specifically, because these are all punishable. Offenses with either you getting a ticking off by the police or the police literally locks you up for the weekend.
And
you would literally see people would actively rather choose to commit the crime versus
drink and drive while coming from church
versus literally saying I'm not going to go to church, but they would literally go to church and feel like their soul needs to be saved every 7 days. It's like a resetting function every 7 days. I commit the most hell in between for 6 days, and the seventh day, it gets expunged. You know, look here, I washed even today. Look at me. I even used Vaseline. You know, I'm all squeaky clean. So, perspectives like that, discussions like that, and then Namibians would go and say, "Yeah, but we only have what was that agency? The IPPR guys, who seems to be the only ones, and then the Namibia Institute for Democracy guys." Who seems to be the only people doing humanities-based research discussions. So we get to ask the questions, Helmut. Why do we have this imbalance specifically?
Tenders, government tenders.
For what?
We want to start construction companies. So we can apply for...
But then FNB anyway takes their consultant from Windhoek to go and build in Divundu. Or to go build in Witvlei. Or to go build in what's another dingy place that I can mention? In Slip.
Remember the Namra prefabricated structures at the border,
which is the curse of the Oshikati High Court discussion. Yeah, yeah. At least the Namra guys knew that they were dealing with someone who dropped them halfway. It's not at least with the Ministry of Justice who were told. we will build prefabricated court buildings in, what was it, Karatura? What? Karatura East.
Or something like that.
And it didn't even follow constituency lines, you know? They didn't even follow constituency placements.
Yeah.
With the parliamentarians even going like, where is Karatura East? Please explain that to us. I also wanted to know, where is Karatura East?
You know, when the whole, like, the whole discussion was taking place between the Standing Committee on constitutional and legal affairs and the people from the judiciary.
Mm.
One guy that basically said, "Look, I didn't write this law." He didn't say they say it in these exact words, but that's basically what he was telling the Standing Committee, because his exact words were, "I'll follow the law to the book."
Mm.
That I think that was the judiciary ED, Mr. Kakuri.
Mm.
He's the one that said, "Look, the replacement of the door, we could have replaced it," because one of the questions that the Standing Committee asked was that, are there no other procurement methods that could have helped fast track the replacing of this door?
So the committee is even asking whether or not there's any shortcuts.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, there is one. It's called the emergency procurement, but replacing a door does not constitute a national disaster.
Exactly. Nor does it constitute an emergency.
Uh-huh.
Even though the door is missing.
According to the procurement, it does not constitute an emergency. But you know what? I think it should constitute an emergency, because there's a lot of private documents in that place that should be kept safe.
Yeah.
But it doesn't constitute disaster.
That Helmut, that's the reason why I keep making the comment. The caliber of members of parliament that we vote in, we really have to start analyzing some of these people.
Look, these are the guys that came from parliament, and they were asking someone from judiciary if they were, these are
if
the
there
law
are
maker.
No shortcuts to the procurement law, meaning they did not read the procurement.
They made the law. They're asking the guy that did not make the law if there are shortcuts.
Yeah. That means they need to be analyzed for their particular, I mean, it's a question of competence, doch man.
Now there was poor Bernard Kakuri explaining, look.
It was him. I remember when I said that it was him, and what was the name, doch? Gladys Pickering, who was the ED of Ministry of Justice at that. And because she was the one that said, "Listen, honorables, listen, you guys are asking me about a financial period before I became."
You people think politics is boring. Politics is full of entertainment.
I could also not understand. And they will. And what was his name? What were the MPs? It was Cooper. It was Katamelo, who's now deputy speaker. And it was what was the former minister of ICT? Tuya.
Yeah.
Cause I could,
he was sharing the whole.
And he's not even part of that. He's not even on that committee. He was not even on that committee, but he was there. But there was a fourth guy also there that didn't almost say anything. A fourth MP. Now these three are so vocal. They're asking, yeah, but where is Karatura East? And why did this not happen? Now Pickering answers, "You guys are asking me about concurrent financial periods," mm-hmm, "for the government."
Yeah.
"Because from 2015 to 2019 is literally like 4 or 5. That's a bit of an exaggeration. At least, no, they ended in 2022. They were, what was the oversight scope? I think it was like up until 2022 or 2023.
I think it was 2022, 2023. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about more than 5 financial years of the government. You're asking the executive director that was appointed just months before that engagement. Okay, so why did you guys not build the prefabricated courthouses or courtrooms?
You know, one thing I don't like, it's how the whole thing, you know, that whole standing committee discussion appeared in newspapers. They made it, they, most of the articles I went through that wrote on that story basically made it look like, made me realize how easy it is to be called corrupt in public office. Not because we really are corrupt. It's just how the story is told. Because when it comes to replacing and the emergency, parameters that is explained in the Public Procurement Act was not emphasized to basically explain as to why Bernard Kakure kept explaining, look, it's not that I don't want to replace the door. I have to do it following the laws of procurement, the procurement laws in place.
Exactly.
Now, unless those emphases are made, you can easily call someone incompetent. That's one. That was in 2024, 2023.
Yeah, that was in 2024 when we had, when I went to go observe and record.
Yeah, that was in 2024.
Yeah.
Because
we only saw the report last year.
Yeah. That was last year.
We saw, when you and I dissected the report again.
Yeah, that was last year.
We saw the report last year.
Now, the explanation that Bernard Kakure was giving as to why they had not replaced the door because they have to follow because replacing a courtroom door does not fall within the parameters of what constitutes emergency procurement in the Public Procurement Act. Ignoring that one puts you in trouble that the Ministry of Health was in with the Office of the Auditor General's report.
Already.
Yeah. Now, that was after Bernard Kakure gave that. I'm thinking someone at the Ministry of Health did not follow that standing committee discussion. Then they decided to redefine, emergency procurement and started procuring things that did not fall under the category of what the Public Procurement Act constitutes as emergency and ended up being cooked by the Office of the Auditor General report.
Yep.
I'm looking at this and you know what? Public offices, terrible.
Unfortunately, those officials will always find themselves in between a hard place and another hard place.
Yeah.
And a lot of rocks. There's not much space for them to move. They can't move forwards and backwards. It's just a hard place here, a hard surface there, and a lot of rocks over there.
You know, one thing that is very common, it's more like a joke. It's more of a conundrum than a joke in administrative law.
Yeah.
That administrative law is trying to balance between giving officials, everything they can to do their jobs the best way they can and also making sure that you keep an eye on them that they don't, abuse their power.
Mm.
So you sort of like have to give them space and also watch them all at the same time. So it's a conundrum. Mm. Now, when it comes to things like, clarifying all this, conundrum, that's basically more like confusion. That's putting a lot of public officials, especially in everything relating to procurement. You basically have to figure out a solution as to how can we find the sweet spot?
Mm.
Yeah. How can we find that sweet spot between making sure that public officials don't abuse their procurement powers and also make sure that the laws are not, restricting their ability to basically get the job done. That sweet spot is the one that we are trying to find with the amendments of the Public Procurement Act, which was also emphasized by the Minister of Finance in a budget speech.
Mm.
Well, so this way your researchers are now supposed to, come in and say, in this country, they had this problem, but this is how they solved it.
But here's the thing, Hamud. We don't see that. How many times have you and I shared articles, for example, from the International Security, what's that website? The ISS Africa.
Institute of Security Studies.
Yeah, Institute of Security Studies, which is literally an NGO that does research on human-based actions. Which is usually international relations and usually aspects of
insecurity,
which is security as well. Because you don't hear a lot of the discussions that really impacts economies. For example, like warfare, the proliferation of AI, the usage of financial mechanisms like commodities and other particular assets to sort of like, influence the global economy. You don't hear those things coming from the Namibian perspective of what we are researching.
Yeah.
I would also like to see specifically from our financial sector, what research do they generate? What do they do, Hamoud? Because Peters from NCRST can stand on a stage and say, you can count the scientists. Yes, if you are doing accounting and business management, it means you can also advance your degree. You can't just end at honors level. And then everyone is like, okay, bye-bye, you're good now, go now. You know, you're good enough.
Get me a job.
We also need to advance.
Drive over Rupa.
We also need to advance research, Hamoud, in education. I think that's a pretty good start for many of us to start from those of us that have advanced, that have degrees already, 3-year degree at least, to start doing honors degrees about Namibia's education system. You go look at the policies, you try and get data, you go and analyze the data, you do a simulation or you do a model or you do whatever, and you then present your stuff. Because seriously, Hamoud, we really need to start bringing out research about even why we've got birds in Namibia. Okay, well, there actually is such research. This was a woman. My sister told me a story about a woman, Hamoud, in the 80s. Her book is still the prescribed book on flowers in Namibia. Do you know what this lady did? She wasn't any sort of like, you know, particularly advanced researcher. All she did was everywhere she went, she stopped next to the road, took a photo of a flower that grew right next to the road, cataloged it, wrote it down, described it, like what those particular researchers do. Like we were also taught that in biology in high school. And then she generated her own book, Flowers of Namibia. You can look it up, guys, on the internet. You can look up this woman's book, Flowers of Namibia. Now, who in their right mind has time to go and research, take a photo, catalog, write down every single flower you come across in Namibia?
You realize that some researches make you look ridiculous, right?
But you know actually how impactful they are.
Yeah, they are. They really are impactful.
Do you know what's one of the biggest concerns? Why, you know, when you look at Africa and you look at parts of Africa in terms of understanding what's going on in Africa, in some cases you'll hear some academics tell you that there are certain like dark spots, meaning some countries don't have adequate enough sort of like research or knowledge or even literature generated about them. It's either that the last time they had anything probably was 30 years in that direction or 40 years in that direction, and that things are just standing still and they don't know where it's going. Now, this could be down to a handful of reasons. For example, a war or a dictator, an authoritarian leader that decided to become a one-party symbol or a one-nation symbol himself.
Free and fair elections that he keeps winning for 40 years in a row.
Ish. And in some cases, he lives in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Don't know why he doesn't trust his own country. Questions will only exist.
He pre-ordered the Bible.
What?
Nothing.
You thought about that one, eh?
We are not going to see that. No.
Any religious leader has to. I mean, even Jesus would certify that joke, Helmut. He pre-ordered the Bible. Even Jesus would certify that Bible. I mean, that just came out of nowhere. But that was a pretty good one. So yeah, besides the pre-ordering of Bibles, if we look at the impact of what research wants to do. Now, I'm still going to produce a second article specifically regarding AU-EU collaboration in terms of research funding discussion, Albert, because there was so much that they were giving in that engagement last week. But here's the biggest concern, Albert. That one of those functions was that Euraxis, I just have to make sure I'm saying it correctly. So the Euraxis guys are already present on the continent in 3 or 4 countries across the continent. Here's the thing. They're not in Southern Africa. Mm. But Namibia is going to be sort of like that first particular connecting point. Now, I remember last year when we did that discussion where the South African Human Research Society of South Africa, that particular engagement where they were doing about climate change.
And we were working with is it the one that was where the NCRST guys were also present.
Yeah. That agency, if you look at how that and that's an agency of South Africa. If you look at what that agency did, that agency went and said, listen, under the theme of climate change and the likes, they brought Zimbabwean researchers and scientists on under climate change. They brought Zambian, Botswanan, Lesotho, or Sotho, Eswatinian, Namibian researchers into one group, and they were talking about this discussion of climate change and from their perspectives and their institutes, meaning universities, what were they presenting forward in this Southern African discussion. I applauded such an approach. But here is the biggest crux always. South Africa had that agency since the 1970s.
Yeah.
That agency, Helmut, and I follow them on their YouTube channel, and they've had recently another particular engagement, but an African-focused one, you know, just African researchers together. And they give you a perspective, obviously African, regarding, you know, various particular things to look into, various particular subject matter, various particular research fields that they would cover, and the kinds of stories that should be told by Africans for Africans, which is a very wonderful position to take as well.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you have to do your research, you still have to go back to your institute, request for funding, which would then ultimately be limited because your institute also gets funding, guess where? From the government. And the government would say, you know what?
Yeah,
we have to prioritize a capital project that a local councillor in one of Namibia's regions does not even know that there's a capital project in his or her region happening right
there. These reports have ruined us.
Yeah, it's made us highly sarcastic, unfortunately.
I know.
But, you know, it's such good punchlines because, I mean, these oversight reports actually tell a different story on the ground. Then, you know, sort of like polishing them over and trying to show, hey, listen, guys.
Like Jeffrey Sachs did with the SDG report of last year.
Yeah, but the Guterres report of 2024
was the truth.
Was literally like, guys, I can't sleep because of what I'm seeing. These results that I'm reading.
It's that bad.
It's sobering reading. If someone uses poetic language like that to say, I was going through the motions of my day, having a wonderful day, and reading this report literally just made me lose appetite for dinner, lunch, tomorrow's breakfast, tomorrow's dinner, tomorrow's lunch, and tomorrow's dinner, all in one go. Then you've got to know that's a real human reaction to have.
Yeah.
Now, here's a funny thing I've realized, Samuel. Even in the research discussions. And I mean, I'm even on these platforms where specifically the journalists try to share, you know, these sort of like research opportunities with each other. For example, doing like 3 months regarding the impact of climate change on, let's say, rural communities. They cite there sometimes even speak from a human perspective, but I have a personal problem with that kind of reporting, journalistic reporting. You know, telling it from a human perspective. What many people forget, especially us humans, what we forget is how we rely on the plant. We rely on an animal being in a specific territory, which has a specific, like, environmental value. Reason being, I'll give you another example. There was a national park in the US where they had literally, they culled the wolf population. It was one national park in the US. And then what's that animal's name? That antelope that they've got? The deer population just exploded.
Because they didn't have a predator.
They didn't have a natural predator. the other sort of like rodent populations exploded.
So one imbalance in the food chain of food web, then
you cause chaos.
Yeah.
And then they brought back the wolf, you know, they brought back wolves into that national park.
Yeah.
The wolves started managing all other animal populations, which actually allowed, for example, the plant life in the national park
to thrive,
to once again thrive and flourish.
Because the large deer population was
or the large herbivore population was a strain on the plant
that was being consumed by the, oh boy.
Now,
so you know, it's amazing that you're causing an imbalance in the carnivore area.
Which is a predator.
Yeah, which is a predator.
Yeah.
And then the consequences of that imbalance begins to cascade all the way to the herbivore.
Yeah.
To the plant.
Or the herbivore comes in, so let's, for example, say, into a problematic scenario because the herbivores just eat.
Yeah.
And they graze and they graze
and
they
multiply.
Yeah, and they multiply.
They don't have any natural predator.
Which is one of the reasons also for why places like the Omaheke region.
Yeah.
And other parts of the country where you don't find, which are like communal land areas, where you will see that there is literally a burden of when let's say the communal farmers have cattle or goats, they're confined in a small space, but they literally place a major burden on the ground or on the soil or on the vegetation to be able to recover. A goat or a cow. What's the thing?
The natural predator is too stingy to sell some of them.
One of them is a grazer of such epic proportions. It's a grazer that they literally graze against the soil level. Even if the small green shoot from the grass is trying to recover, they'll even eat that off. I don't know if it's the goat or the cow.
That must be goats, because goats are something else.
And both of them are hooven animals.
Yeah.
So they kick up dust, or they literally destroy topsoil levels, which also degrades the ability of plant life to recover.
Look, I think this is why wild animals are just migratory by nature, to allow for land recovery. And then we started fencing them off.
Yeah.
So now we have to pay the consequences of, you know, Mother Nature designed it in a way that it's self sustaining.
Yeah.
And we came in and we're like, you know what? I think we'll just take this whole sustainable thing in our own hands. And we are failing with, what's the opposite of passing with flying colors? We are failing with crawling colors. That's the best I could think of.
Helmut, what's going on? Why are you on a roll here with the jokes? I mean, starting with the pre-ordering of the Bible, you know, that's classic. That is quintessential Helmut 101 right there. But from then on, it is
a roller coaster. More like having a domino effect. So it's a food chain. Just, don't disturb it. Just leave it like that. And I think if you look at the best way that we, you know, the best place we have done that is in energy, especially hydroelectricity. When a dam is built, it's not to block the passage of the water. You just channel it in a way that you can harness its energy, which is why whenever there's heavy rains in places, especially in Windhoek, one thing that we are told by the authorities, do not block the water.
Yeah.
Channel it.
Yeah.
If you block it, it's going to cause problems.
Now, we've obviously had the discussion of that Blue Nile annoyance factor that the Ethiopians caused.
And between Egypt and Ethiopia.
And Sudan, yeah. And I have a sneaky suspicion. I can't prove it, but I have a sneaky suspicion it also happened in Namibia. And it also happened probably in South Africa or even in Botswana. But Botswana was considered like one massive communal land area. Whereas Namibia and South Africa technically have the division of communal land and private land ownership formulas. I have a sneaky suspicion specifically like in the commercial land capacities of Namibia that blocking water sources, fresh water sources flowing from one farm to another farm is something that has happened. I've just not been on every farm. I can't prove it. But it's a sneaky suspicion, because here's the thing, Ahmed. There are places in this country where you would find people that told you a river flowed here. The stream, it flowed.
Okay, you could just follow the stream to see if there's maybe a farm or
and then you
a
get
mining
to a
installation somewhere that's that basically channeled the water.
Yeah, and then you get to a fence and the fence is private. Don't cross. So there are instances like that. Because if you can find a river bed or a stream bed, meaning a dried up river bed where a river used to run, you have to ask yourself, so why is this river not flowing? Why is this river not flowing?
Some of them could be one of, you know, some of those, like, what they call them, non-perennial ones, the ones that only flows when during heavy rains and then they dry off during dry seasons.
You will not believe me, Ahmed, when the amount of research that missionaries, explorers, the way like we understand them, like the Indiana Joneses, how much knowledge has been written about places like Southern Africa, like Namibia, like Botswana. You would not believe me. Helmut, up and until 1900, you would not believe the amount of knowledge that has been written about Namibia.
So non-Africans have, hold more about Africa's knowledge than Africans at this point.
Exactly. And it's not things about science. Okay, yeah, the bad guys like the Eugen Fischers or those entities. What was that other doctor's name that I read about, man? That bad guy. Was his name an Alexander or something? Those guys obviously came with their eugenics perspectives.
The one you said the other time inspired Joseph Mengele.
Yeah. It sounded like, because the assumption I had was it was Eugen Fischer, because it was proven Fischer was in Namibia at that time. But the guy working directly with, for example, like the Shark Island concentration camp was not Fischer. It was another guy, a Dr. Alexander or something. And that guy was sort of like the be-all and end-all, if you could think of mad scientist / bad person, you know, who was willing to commit any particular sort of like
In the name of quote-unquote science.
Unethical act in the name of, science. It was this guy. And this guy was a medical doctor. So there is so much knowledge written about Namibia. And even then, today, what I'm doing currently today, Ahmed, I'm buying, like, these books, these research books. So the one is Akira Tokada. He obviously loves the sun, various sun groups in Namibia and even in Southern Africa. He studies them extensively. He's a Japanese guy that loves these prehistoric civilizations and obviously writes about them. The guy that wrote about beer production. As something as base, an economic function as beer production.
Yeah, which contributes significantly.
Yeah, and which Namibians significantly
consume,
persistently consume, and even support, even when sin taxes are announced, or the increment of sin taxes are announced annually, every year, by the Ministry of Finance, or the Minister of Finance, Namibians go and support it. And even, what's the other book that I saw? There was another one that came out from Jürgen Zimmerer. He's also the other historian on Namibia's particular historic history. I'm collecting these books specifically, Helmut, because they give you glimpses of colonial history of Namibia. History that starts from 1921. Up until now is a sklar. It's there. The South Africans were here.
Yeah.
But there's so much that the Namibians don't know of what happened pre-1921. The stories, the things that the scientists that were brought from Germany did here. The analysis, for example, I would love if someone can get their hands on the blue book that the British had about German atrocities in Namibia. The British in South Africa compiled this thing known as the Blue Book, which is also research.
A lot of British colonial history, especially the atrocious activities that were committed by the British at the height of their colonial empire, must have been destroyed in what they call that. They conducted that in the 1950s. It is a operation.
The one about the
legacy,
Mama.
Yeah.
No, the one about the Mama uprising.
Operation Legacy was just dedicated to the, you know, the wind of change was spreading across the African continent. They could not maintain their, you know, their colonial, their yeah. colonial empire.
Yeah.
They knew that the new, like, black administrations were beginning to basically take over across the planet. So, across the continent. So now they had to, to hide as much atrocities as possible. Because you don't want, the person that you've been oppressing to take over the government and they can read through everything that you did to them.
Mm.
So they,
that's what they also did to the Indians.
Yeah. They destroyed a lot of it.
It's most the Kenyan information and the Indian information, but the actions there yeah. that they destroyed most. Yeah, supposed. I have a sneaky suspicion. It's still there.
Yeah, some of it, I think when it comes to some documents out of Operation Legacy were leaked, I think 2023, 2024.
Mm.
Yeah, that was in the UK. I remember, just making a bunch of jokes about it.
But that was after, what's her name? After Elizabeth passed away, most.
Yeah.
Then someone leaked these things most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's also around the same time when some, colonial artifacts went missing in the, from the British Museum. And the British Museum appealed to the public to help them find those artifacts. And everyone.
The artifacts that they also.
The people.
Suspiciously.
Yeah.
Came to own.
Yeah. The people on social media went bananas with that one. Like, so let me get this straight. You want me to help you something that was stolen from you, which you also stole from someone else? Like, what's the morality here? Because I'm trying to get the picture. I want to help you. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking for the moral grounds that will enable.
Because it's a stolen artifact.
It's something you stole.
Yeah.
And now it was stolen from you. Now I have to find. Now I have to help you find it.
Mm.
So now let's follow that train of thought. Now, if you stole it and someone else stole it from you, and I now have to help you find it, doesn't that mean I also have to help the guy that you stole it from? To find it so you can retain it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Quick break. Welcome to British History.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 19 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. But before we continue, let's take a live read. Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, a Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for only 159 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Harrier's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for 179 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Each KWV 3-year-old brandy for 199 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Richly brandy for 189 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just 239 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. So one thing that was pointed out in the NCRST EU-AU research collabo is that not only is, okay, which is a positive thing because you are looking at this massive, a massive investment that's getting in, that's being put into a sector that is not very prioritized. And this is not just in Namibia, it's across the continent.
Yeah.
Research and development, not our strong suit. We'll just wait for something that's researched and developed somewhere else. Then we start saying, why are they not sharing it with us? And when it comes to health now, that's why I think back in 2024, 2024, the World Economic Forum, 2024 last year emphasized in terms of how Africa is lacking in terms of research and development on the continent.
Mm.
They emphasized the health because what happened during COVID-19, everyone was doing their research.
Yep.
Except us, we were just like, okay, now where is the help going to come from? Look, being a Christian, there's one thing I can tell you.
Well, some Namibians were also just literally asking, why can't we go outside?
Yeah, look, the war taking place in the Middle East is also showing you and me that prayers, in some wars, you need the Iron Dome, not prayers. Because if you just say, you know what, we are the God's chosen people, Iran's missiles are not going to get to us, just switch off the Iron Dome, they would be obliterated by now.
Mm.
Now, so research and development, if you ask me, research is part of development. Research must be part of development, especially if you want to produce, your own, works that have intellectual property and actually, the good feel of you producing everything from the ground up.
Yeah.
But like it was pointed out in that discussion, infrastructure is required, and not only are we producing less researchers, but the ones that we are producing, we don't have opportunities for them on the continent, so they're leaving. Commercial break.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintuk beer. For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made. And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. Not producing enough researchers, those who are producing are not having enough opportunities on the continent, so they're packing up and leaving. Yeah.
Or
so
they come back without the
intellectual property of the works.
And they can't restart at the site either.
So now we have to kill, I don't know, 5 birds with 1 stone. We have to, first of all, produce the money, and to fund research, and then make sure that they train researchers. And when you are training these researchers, we must train them in a way that once they have gone through training, there are opportunities for them to keep their knowledge on the continent.
Mm.
Except if you look at our academic produce, if you can call us that, is that that quickly becomes an unemployment issue. No kidding. That quickly becomes an unemployment issue on the highest level, because there's not much of a difference between that and, those ones that are graduating in fields like education or health, and they can't find jobs. Basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And now ask yourself, for someone who has an advanced degree in a specific line of work, that's a specialist. How much are you paying them?
It's also the thing of Helmut, how you look at how our, for example, let's take a look where you find most researchers and most scientists in Namibia. They are either in an administrative role, or they are in limited roles in universities, meaning there's only so many lecturer posts open. Administrative roles?
Yeah.
Like I said.
So he's a researcher by training, but
Peter's herself.
Yeah. He's an administrator.
Doctor, professor, or professor, doctor. Such a title.
Yeah.
The person is a scientist.
Yeah.
But the person is the CEO of an agency. What are we doing, Helmut?
What? So she's not being, she's not applying her full potential in line with what she basically studied for. She's good at.
It's not just that, Helmut. You can even see in the Namibian economy. You know, I realized like 5, 6, 7 years ago, there's a whole bunch of ceilings, career ceilings in this country.
Oh.
And it also was highlighted by the 2023 labor force survey. They also highlighted it. There's a whole bunch of career ceilings because it's either that the boss you have only has grade 12 and that person has been there for 10 years and you can see in the next 10 years that person is still going to be there.
Yeah.
You'll be stuck in the same role. You can have as many degrees on your name. If you're still in the same company or same organization, that person with that grade 12 that's currently the manager won't move today.
I mean, I think that brings to my mind one of my, favorite ministers in Namibia. Former Minister of International Relations used to make fun of him that he had had more PhDs than the Namibian population.
No, yeah, because that guy was, I think he was our most highly
academically
educated.
Inclined.
Yeah.
But
you have to look at it like more he's like academically powered. Minister that we have because he had a lot of degrees.
Yeah.
If you had a look at him in terms of comparing all the ministers of the previous cabinet, I think he was the most. He is.
Yeah.
He is the most academically powered.
Yeah.
Individual.
Bro had more degrees than ministers. Like that's how. He's still my favorite. Look, look at the position that he was in. I don't know where he is now. The former head of the National Planning Commission, Obid Gajobe.
What? According to his Wikipedia, yes, he's got a Wikipedia, guys.
Yeah.
According to his Wikipedia, he just has his geology degree and another advanced degree.
Geology.
That's also the thing. How many geologists do we have, Helmut?
Geology.
I know someone who completed the geology degree in South Africa.
Yeah.
Came back to Namibia, couldn't find a job.
That's the part now that.
And then she decided to do a journalism degree at NUST.
Boy, that's painful.
That's Namibia for you. You train as a scientist in South Africa. You come back to Namibia, hoping to get into the job market. You realize, I love reading. That's my other hobby. Let me just go into a journalism degree.
Yeah, I think I know someone like that. Has an advanced degree in anthropology. Was struggling.
The study of humans.
Yeah.
And the person has to do what?
Now she has one, but I think she's also in one of these administrative
roles.
Yeah.
So there are so many Namibians that unfortunately, Hamoud, have to come back to a country. We love our country. There's so many of us. And then you are met by, and I unfortunately have to use this, the mediocrity of what Namibia wants to achieve. And I'm using mediocrity, strongly here and also in an honest manner. Because, for example, I asked the question back on Monday at the NIPDB, investment guide launch. And I asked the economist, Salamohe, in terms of what you guys now just launched, these four volumes, have you guys also taken note specifically of why we have towns in this country that are stuck 30 years ago?
It's like they're frozen in time.
They're just frozen in time. They're not moving forward. They're just getting worse. They're just getting worse. Service provision is not happening. And obviously he gave his answer there in terms of they looked at that, meaning the potential that certain towns and regions have, the undiscovered rough gem, that kind of an explanation. It has a potential, but it's a question of how do you bring this potential to the fore? for it starting to provide its economic strength. Mm-hmm. Or when you look at a discussion, for example, of like that capital projects report that you and I dissected last year, whether or not the politicians of the other regions are on board to understanding what's happening here in Windhoek, so that they know when they go back to their regions, guys, that's groot planne. There are big plans. Get on board. Let's do this. Is that happening? Are they brought on board, their governors, their regional councils, and told, listen, the national strategy for Namibia is we need to develop the tourism sector. If you don't have a functioning tourism sector in your region by 2029, there's a big problem.
Yeah, but okay. When we talk about the decentralization of power, I think to some degree we have already done that. We have the National Council, which is literally made out of councillors.
But here's the thing, Helmut. You have a governor. He's not on that council.
He's
on the regional council where that councillor comes from.
Yeah.
But that governor doesn't come to Windhoek to come sit in the National Council.
Yeah.
That governor reports to the president. So that council on the National Council comes to Windhoek, the governor is literally like babysitting what the councillors have to come and do in Windhoek, babysitting the region. And then there's another issue. That councillor forms part of a town council.
Yeah.
So what happens on the town council level? What happens on the regional council level? What decisions do they make? How do they present their budgets to a Sankwasa, a minister?
Yeah.
Before Sankwasa, it was in Erastus Utoni. Before Utoni, who was it? Utoni Noyoma, yeah. No? Who was the previous minister of urban and regional? Oh no! Before Erastus Utoni, they changed the name. It went from, it had that very long name. What was that ministry's name?
Jeez.
It was, lands was part of it. Which is now found in agriculture, the part of lands. It was Ministry of...
Been shape-shifting.
Oh, man. What was that ridiculous region, ministry's name? But it is literally what MURD is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, in each one of those particular scenarios, and this is also like you highlighted, it's a good thing you mentioned the at the start of our talk also how the information is projected specifically through the media, because in the media context, and this is ultimately... where we also, as if you're a media practitioner out there, how you also tell or convey a message. Now, the biggest concern, obviously, is that there's an editor in between that edits things. But if you are writing as an observer from a scientific position, because an observer or observation is a scientific process, if you are writing from an observation perspective, an event, recording it, jotting it down, reporting it, obviously now the editor comes in and then, you know, sort of like storifies the thing.
Yeah.
Jack beat up Jill. Jill ran to the police office.
Throwing some spice.
Went to the police station. While that was happening, Jill was throwing profanities back at Jill, at Jack. And unfortunately, Jack just was further enraged. Now it sounds like a whole, sort of like,
dramatized.
A telenovela situation that you're watching on TV, but through words. Instead of it just saying, of the whole scenario from the police report being that Jack is accused of domestic violence. Straightforward stuff. Jill suffered XYZ particular, either bruises from, you know, from being attacked physically, and she reacted by throwing, you know, verbal abuse back at him, obviously for being in discomfort. And Jack responded with further violence. But before that, we've got to take a live read.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops. Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for $159.99. Harry's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for $179.99 each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for $199.99. Richelieu Brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just $239.99. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. this is one confusing situation we find ourselves in. This is a, you know, this is a Confucius 101. We need to produce researchers.
Yeah.
We have to figure out how to produce them. And the AU-EU collabo seems to be the one thing that's going to be helpful from the look of things, at least for the next 7 years, that they're going to pump money into this, you know, into this avenue.
Mm.
So after producing these academics who are specialists in their line of work, they have advanced degrees that they have spent years to acquire. We have to figure out ways to keep them by making sure that, you know, after they graduate, there are opportunities available for them. Yeah, that is going to be one giant problem. That means, that translates into building research facilities.
Now, that's supposed to be the biggest concern here, Helmut. Now, I'll capture just this one point so as not to bridge over into our next talking point.
Yeah.
Which is about research facilities. But here's the thing. Linking back to the 2024 research and development report by the same institute, NCRST, they literally highlighted that the biggest concern is things have stood still. And this also means for equipment, up-to-date equipment, recapacitating or ultimately retraining the existing technical staff. And also hiring new technical staff, because you've got to look at the facility, you know, having or trying to advance its particular purpose. You can't be stuck in 2010 or in a 2000.
Yeah.
You can't be stuck 10 years back. You can't be stuck 20 years back. When I every time when I think about that book that I read, by the two Stevens, the guys that wrote Think Like a Freak, no, they wrote Freakonomics. The book I read, the second book of theirs is Think Like a Freak, where they went to a research institute, Helmut. And this research institute, and I'll still mention this story every time, this research institute only had to test whether or not a product was feasible for the market. So if a product said it, an electric product says it can be submerged in water, they will test the length to which the product can be submerged.
So they're basically like the Jerry Riggs everything guy.
Exactly. If this thing says it can if the window says it can shatter under so much amount of force being thrown at it, they will test it every time. And I still remember one of the best adverts that I ever saw on TV was the guys of the security door, for home defense from South Africa. What was that? What was the company's name? Telidor or something. They still sell it in Namibia. The CEO went on TV for his own ad, and they would have this giant sledge ball, what is that ball's name? That crash ball that knocks down buildings.
The one that swings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a giant, that ball swing at, now between him and that ball is his own product. Now, if you always want to have the best advertisements, it's always that you literally demonstrate your products. Particular use.
Yeah.
That whole crash ball swings at him, gets blocked by the door. One of the best adverts ever.
They are like indicating that's how strong it is.
When he gave a post interview about how he felt about that advert that he did,
yeah,
he said he was nervous, anxious beyond everything. He even was so scared with the sound of the connection of the ball and the door and the gate.
Yeah.
He said he'll never do it again. But literally it was at a time, obviously, when the business was still, a small enterprise or an emerging enterprise. And he literally wanted to showcase to South Africa, to the South African market. This is for your best home defense.
Yeah.
Your best home defense is always sometimes having the best door to keep, you know, the burglars are
for your own security,
for their own home security.
Yeah.
It's not about owning a gun. It's not about having dogs. And it's just about having this door to literally, that is the only divider between you and your safety from a burglar.
Oh boy. So the research and basically the research discussion, and also in terms of producing researchers, is the conundrum we find ourselves in, we have to figure out how to produce them, fund them, and build institutions that they, you know, that will keep them on the continent after they have, you know, gone through and basically, well, graduated, if you can call it that.
But researchers continuously research, Amot.
Yeah, they continuously research to produce their own works, which they patent.
Even in this discussion, ne, this EU-AU, this thing that was held here in Windhoek, the charge d'affaires of the EU, the European Union's, what's the thing's name? Embassy here in Windhoek. The guy mentioned in his particular sort of like, you know, they almost have that political situation, dignitary saying thank you, yes, thank you, yeah, and all protocol observed. The guy said, Namibia is going to get, or is in the process of the, that telescope that was the MOU between UNAM and Radboud University. That telescope that's going to be is installed at the Gamsberg mountain range here outside Windhoek on your way as you head southwards. That is an initiative driven by researchers, scientists who say, we don't just want to rely on Chile, but we can't ask the South Africans because the South Africans are doing the exact same thing because there's a little bit of a competition there. And which I always cite, you know, learn from a fellow African country, South Africa. Because South Africa is the only, did you know South Africa is the only African country that has a claim to the, to the South Pole?
Yeah.
South Africa has a, has a South, as an Antarctica mission, scientific mission. Okay. It's also this that had the dramatic situation last year where, the one team member, the one guy was beaten up by the other guy because the guy that was beaten up was acting a little bit weird towards the female counterparts on the team. And he got beaten up and then the team radioed back to Cape Town and say, listen, come get this guy. He's an issue. So, but the South Africans have a research and science station on the South Pole, on the, on Antarctica.
And they're that close. Makes sense.
We're also as we're also close to Antarctica. Can you just, why does Namibia not have a claim to Antarctica?
Give us a break, dude. We're just
here. The US has a claim to Antarctica. The UK has. France has. Russia has a station there. Russia and the US on the other end of the world. They have, Canada also has a station on the other end of the world. China has a station there. Japan has a station there. Namibia doesn't have a station.
Basically like the ISS, but on land.
Exactly.
Yeah. 6 minutes into business and economic segment, except today is business with Roy. That brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You'll have a blessed evening.
On that note, guys, stay tuned for the next program after the break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm,
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.